Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Ask not.
The Beatles.
Those circuses on the air.
When the president does it,
sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you
tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Oh, we're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And from the newsroom, Dave Schwann takes over the anchor chair. Good morning.
I love you, too.
What's going on, buddy?
Morning, Dave.
What's happening?
Well, back in the saddle here.
Back in the saddle. I love your adventures, Dave. Always love hearing about them. I do. And we're actually going to talk about a couple of them during the history segment.
Because okay.
There's special reporting that you've done over the years on a couple of these subjects. The first one, which you have not done, which I'd like to see a report on, was the invention of toilet paper. So, there we go. So it's the Chinese invention of toilet paper. Because what did people use before this? I mean, you got to think about this. Grass, leaves, fur,
what
shells, corn
Sears
cobs.
Catalogs for?
Yeah. Well, that's what they said. So, corn cobs and pages from newspapers and magazines were commonly used. The Sears catalog, obviously known for that. But they would put out humorous spin-offs called the Rears and Sorbut catalog. I mean, Camille, I know you're listening to this. I mean, you think about a catalog, but people are using corn cobs. I mean, there was no toilet paper. I'd grab a squirrel myself. But it says the Farmer's Almanac had a hole in it, so they would hang it on a hook.
Yes.
So that was another one that they would just grab and rip pages out of.
I'm sorry, what year?
It's dumb. 1973. No, this is
1973.
No, this is the 1920s.
Oh,
right.
Late 1800s. Maybe late 1800s. Yeah.
Well, let me tell you. All right. So the first packaged toilet paper was sent out in New York in 1857. But the rolled toilet paper we know today was 1880. But it didn't become more mainstream until the 1920s. Seriously, like there's still rural areas that use the Sears catalog in the early 1900s.
Or whatever they could find.
Or whatever they could find. There you go. 1859, this is something you have reported on. The first Pullman sleeping car was in service. So it was introduced originally in 1838, providing hotel sleeping accommodations on overnight passenger trains. And although their use was not widespread to the late 1850s, Pullman began building and operating sleeping cars officially in 1959. And, of course, you did an amazing report maybe 2-3 years ago on the whole Pullman
journey.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
And that really kind of came about because George Pullman himself was traveling somewhere and had an absolutely miserable train ride going from Chicago to somewhere else. And he said, there's got to be a better way.
Well, there's a couple of clips
came about
of how this came about. And one of them is Pullman porter Herman Simmons. So let's take a listen to a couple clips here about the story of Pullman.
They were ordinary men going about their jobs as railroad attendants, making beds, shining shoes, and cooking and serving meals. In the process, they achieved something extraordinary. They blazed a path for the rise of the black middle class and helped propel the civil rights movement in America.
All All right, let's listen to the other Pullman interview. I'm sorry, we're laughing.
We're laughing about something else.
Yeah, my voice. Pullman Porter Herman Simmons. There we go.
You know all the Pullman Porters that lived in the neighborhoods and living a good life. A lot of them were buying their homes. All of them had cars. And they would seem to be different from the rest of the neighborhood. So we set an image for us that we wanted to kind of be like them. Being black, you couldn't get decent jobs anyhow, you know. And that seemed to be the only, well, at that time, we thought it was a decent job.
1888, George Eastman patented the roll film camera for Kodak. 1901, U.S. President William McKinley shot by an anarchist while visiting the Pan American Exhibition in New York.
And who became president?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that question. after McKinley, Roosevelt?
Yep.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Look at that.
Yep. Was vice president at the time, yeah.
And he was the youngest person ever president until John Kennedy.
Wow. Isn't Trump the oldest?
I think he might be.
Like first older taking than Reagan office. Even.
Well, Reagan, I think Reagan was in his late 60s when he first became president in 81. But yes, I believe Donald Trump is probably, you know, the oldest person to take office, you know, to start the first term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. 1960, and the first true supermarket, the Piggly Wiggly, opened. By Clarence Saunders in Memphis, Tennessee. And
they had those in southern Indiana, too.
Piggly Wiggly. Camille, you're going to Tennessee. What are you going to do there while you're there?
Going to go to Nashville.
Cool. You know, you got to do the
Grand Ole Opry.
Grand Ole Opry, for sure.
I'm trying to convince my friends. I really want to go.
Absolutely.
Let's go alone.
And the Country Music Hall of Fame, because it's one of the best museums. I mean, I love the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but... And I'm not a big country music person, and that Country Music Hall of Fame is phenomenal.
What'd you like about it, Dave?
Just the interaction and how everything was put on display and the stories that were told.
It was well arranged.
Well arranged. 1934, the first NFL Chicago All-Star Game. Chicago Bears 0, All-Stars 0. 80,000 in attendance. 1939, World War II began when Germany invaded Poland. 1972, fast forwarding a bit here, Rod Stewart's first number one hit, You Wear It Well, debuted. Of course, he was with the group The Dimensions before that. 1975, Gunsmoke goes off the air. And Gunsmoke premiered on CBS in 1955. But on radio, it was on from 1952 to 61. Then on TV from 55 to 75, one of the longest-running TV dramas of all time, started in radio.
I love that show.
It was a great show.
Yeah, James R. Ness on TV. And was it Robert Conrad?
I think
or
so.
Or Joseph Conrad?
No, it was Robert.
Robert.
And they still play all the Westerns on MeTV.
It was Matt Dillon on radio.
That's right, Matt Dillon. That's right. And it was syndicated, I think, as Matt Dillon for a while there, too.
Yes, it was.
1977, the last broadcast of the Mary Tyler Moore Show on CBS. It was 1970. Mary Richards, of course, coming from the Dick Van Dyke Show, was the first female television character to be independent. They wanted to divorce her, but they were concerned that viewers would think she divorced Dick Van Dyke.
Really?
Right. So they changed it to a broken engagement so that they could really establish a new
character. Yeah, well, the broken engagement began the Mary Tyler Moore Show in and of itself.
Right.
Yeah.
But originally she was going to be a divorcee. So Gavin McLeod, Ted Knight, Valerie Harper, Cloris Leachman, Betty White, and Ed Asner, of course. The show spun off three television series, all of which aired on CBS, Rhoda, Phyllis, and the one-hour drama, Lou Grant. And then in 2000, Moore and Harper reprised their roles in a two-hour ABC TV movie, Mary and Rhoda.
I think the Lou Grant spinoff was the most successful.
It was, 77 to 82.
I like that one, too. Seasons. That was very well done.
Yeah. It was different because it was a drama. Mm-hmm. You know, everything else was... Rhoda did pretty well, too. But the show ended, still top of the ratings. And here's Ted Knight as Ted Baxter announcing the end of Newsroom of Fictional WJM-TV.
Last night, as I lay awake in my bed, I wondered, how do I tell these dear friends and colleagues how I feel about them? How, I wondered, do you speak from here instead of here? Well, I finally got an idea. Up here.
So prolific.
Finally, the words came to me. I put them down on paper and put them in here.
I think I'm going to be sick here.
I think what I was feeling was best expressed in the lyrics of that wonderful old song. It's a long way to Tipperary. It's a long way to go. This is Ted Baxter saying good night and good news.
And then, of course, they all hugged in the newsroom, and it was one of the first times when a television series ended that they actually showed the cast coming out and taking their final bows.
I remember watching it.
Right?
Yep. It was awesome. And then just, what was it, the first part of the year here where Mary Tyler Moore died, called it up on YouTube to watch it again.
Of course. And that night, I'll tell you, Saturday nights, and I just talked about this with an old friend, that Saturday nights on CBS, as today they're burning off shows and reruns and sports, that was the biggest night on television. It was Mary Tyler Moore. It was
Bob Newhart.
It was All in the Family. It was the Jeffersons. It was MASH at one point. It was Carol Burnett.
From Television City in Hollywood, it's the Carol Burnett Show. With Harvey Korman. Vicki Lawrence.
Conway. Now, Dave, I spoke to Carol Burnett a couple years back about the Carol Burnett Show and airing on Saturday nights, one of the most legendary nights of television greatness. Let's take a listen. This is what killed me when I was a kid, because I was born in 67, so I missed those early years. But when the season ended in May or whenever it was, and you you were mopping up, I hated it because I knew I wasn't going to see you again for months.
Oh.
It was a bummer because, I mean,
that's so sweet.
That was Saturday nights. That was Saturday nights, is making popcorn, getting in your jammies, and watching Carol Burnett for my age. Yeah.
That's the nicest compliment you can give me.
Oh.
Thank you.
Well, I mean it from the bottom of my heart. And it is so much fun to watch those shows. I have to ask you, I'm sure you've been asked this before. You had favorites that were on the show because you gelled with those people, you know, the Ken Berrys, the Jim Nabors. Was Jimmy Stewart the most exciting guest that you've had on the show that really did something?
Actually, he wasn't a guest. He came on and surprised me on our final show.
On the special evening with Carol Burnett, that's right.
Yeah, the very last show of the 11th season, and I didn't know he was there, but we were friends. And so Tim came out, and he said, he interrupted me. I was talking to the audience. He said, there's a guy backstage who's always wanted to be on the show, and I thought you should give him a whirl or whatever it was he said. And I thought, what in the world is Tim talking about? And the curtain went up, and there was Jimmy sitting at the piano.
Wow. I remember that. The curtains opened. That's right.
Oh, and I screamed, and then I started to cry because he was my favorite actor.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, and so he wasn't what you would call a regular guest that week, but he came on, he played us and sang his favorite song, Ragtime Cowboy Joe, and then he came over and talked to me, and he said, in essence, he was very complimentary about our 11 years and so forth and whatever, and I was blubbering like a baby. I was just so touched, and they hid him all day in a dressing room, so you know, out of sight, so I wouldn't see him.
What a nice
gift. He and his wife came, and they were just kind of hanging out backstage, you know, and I had no idea that he was going to do that, but it was it was one of the most thrilling things that ever happened to me on the show.
What a lovely gift.
Yeah.
What a lovely gift. And what surprises me is you guys did the show a couple times. You know, you did a more of a dress rehearsal, and then you did the actual show. I mean, that's a lot of work.
We taped around 5 o'clock, the dress rehearsal, and we would tape that, and then we'd break and have notes and maybe rewrite a couple of things, and then have a different audience come in, and then we'd do the show at 8. But we didn't. We would go pretty much straight through because I never wanted to keep the studio audience waiting. So I'd make quick costume changes since the scenery would go fast. And we'd be out of there. We'd take maybe an hour and 15 minutes. And we'd be out of there in about 2 hours, 15
wow.
minutes. Yeah. Because now some shows today, I mean, they go to 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, they keep doing pickups and this and that, and the audience is long gone. And it, I don't think it makes it any better.
Well, you did it almost close to live. I mean, you tried to
yes,
do.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a bug about that because I didn't want to keep the studio audience waiting. And if they got bored and we couldn't get their, you know, get them to respond, then we weren't that good. You know what
sure.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we really kept it going, you know. And I would make a bet with the stagehands that I could do a skin-out change faster than they can move a sofa over to the other
great.
End of the stage. You know, it's my Broadway training.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
man, we'd be out, and in time, we'd finish in time to go to dinner, take the guests to dinner.
How cool is that?